check it out now.
This is the good stuff. The Australian Open podcast preview on the Beating the Book podcast feed. Gil Alexander, this is this gets more exciting than even football does, I think, at this point, for those of us who are into tennis as we are. Tennis hardos, as Drew Dinsick once called them. the Australian Open, we do all four slams, and we do Indian Wells. We give a nod to the fifth slam, if you will. My guest is always for these podcasts, that man laughing right there, Drew Dinsick. He is the co-host of Not One But Two podcast, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, and of course, NBC Sports Bet the Edge, which he does with Jay Croucher, and the tennis hardo. He and Andy started that tennis chat years ago, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Is that true?
Yeah. Good morning. Good Friday morning, Melbourne time.
That's right. Melbourne. That's Melbourne, by the way.
Melbourne time. It feels like Melbourne here. It is like 80 degrees and beautiful, beautiful weather here. Man.
I played tennis today in Vegas. It's gorgeous.
Oh,
it's
man. What a gift.
What a gift. Oh, yeah. Well, sorry to the rest of the nation, I guess. I'm getting to say that. And then Zach Cohen, who not only does everything at VSiN.com and multiple sports, but he also, and he'll have to update me on all the other tennis stuff he does, but he works, he does tennis channel stuff, tennis.com. Tell me all the stuff you do, Zach. Zach Cohen, everybody.
Yeah, I mean, senior editor at VSiN.com, so a lot of stuff for VSiN with Gil, but a little bit of stuff with Tennis Channel as well. Not as much as usual. We're not doing the Tennis Bet Show anymore, but still doing some appearances on Second Serve and still doing some stuff for them video-wise as well.
Okay, can we talk about that for a second? So Tennis Channel leaned into gambling, and then they decided, maybe not so much?
I think so. I think that's what happened. I mean, there's just new leadership there in general, so just things have changed a lot. Yeah.
I also think, like, the tennis establishment, I get why they're kind of anti-gambling, because the worst bettors in the world seem to be tennis bettors when it comes to just harassing players.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that's true.
Player harassment's a huge problem. They were probably like expecting some sort of big affiliate parachute, and the affiliate money is evaporated.
Probably true. That's right. Not great timing on that count. All right, before we do anything men's, women's, from a tournament long perspective, and then I don't know if Drew, if you even had a chance to look at first round matches, because there are some bangers on the men's side, Zach and I were just talking about. But I'm just curious, because I brought this up on a numbers game on the radio side, a couple just random things about this that I thought were noteworthy. One, and this is just me being curious. One, did you see the Sebastian Offner Bashavareddy qualifying thing? So for those who missed it, typically tiebreakers go to seven. If you're not a tennis hardo, you may not know that in some of these slams, and they've had a hard time homogenizing all the rules in all four slams. But apparently in the qualies in the Australian Open, it doesn't go to seven, it goes to 10, which was much of the surprise of Sebastian Offner, who thought he won the match, a qualifier, to advance to hope to get into the tournament itself. He got to 7-1. He raised his hands in victory, and the Australian umpire said, "Hey, mate, it's not over. We're going to 10. And he's like, "What? I didn't win?" He's like, "Nar, you didn't win." So it was that. So that's my first question. Did you guys know that the qualifiers go to 10 on the tiebreaker? I had no idea.
Isn't that the decider goes to the super breaker anyway? Is that what it is?
Well, it's only the fifth set in slams, right, that goes to 10. Why would you do it in a qualifier? It made no sense. Anyway,
that's just it. Yeah.
Yeah, Bashavareddy back and wins and does the Reggie Miller choke sign, which I could not believe he did. And then the other thing, and I brought this up not to belabor it, but because there's nothing to do with the tournament. But I thought, you know, and for those who heard it on the radio side, I apologize for repeating this, but it was so awesome to me. And I was told I used the word awesome too much when describing this, so I'll use a different word. But they came up with this one point slam thing. Typically, if you have tennis exhibitions, there are these kind of hokey, light comedy things where everybody wears the Bobby Brown My Prerogative microphones. And, you know, every once in a while, Novak Djokovic cracks a joke and you're like, "Oh, these tennis players, they can be so light," right? It's like, corny like that. But this was such a brilliant idea. They started it last year. Nobody really bought in that much. This year, they got 48 players. Some the best in the world: Carlos Alcaraz, Jannik Sinner on the men's side, Iga, Amanda Nisimova on the women's side, among the players, but others as well. Then they got some like low-ranked pros, some amateurs, and some local Australian celebrities. And literally, it's like if Zach, if you played Yannick Sinner for a point to try to get, if you get to the end of the bracket, just a bracket format, you win $1 million Australian, which roughly translates, I guess, by the currency exchange to $670,000 American, something like that. So this was awesome. I don't know if you guys saw this. Did you see any of this?
It broke through.
It broke through, right?
Yeah, I mean, this crossed over. This escaped the gravity of tennis Twitter only, and it was like, it was generally, people were intrigued. What is this? What is happening? How did that? What that? What? What? Yeah, and it, you know, the U.S. Open tried something similar as far as a cultural breakthrough monoculture deal with the, you know, the team mixed doubles, and I think this did a better job of breaking through, and it was cheaper and easier. So yes. I think we're going to see 1 point slams regularly.
What ended up happening, just long and short of it, I'll keep it to like 30 seconds, was you ended up having, again, there were buys, since there were 48, you had some buys, but generally it was just a standard bracket, and you ended up having, you know, an amateur playing a pro, and all, again, it all takes is one bad swing, or in the case of like Sinner against the eventual winner, this amateur Australian player by the name of Jordan Smith, I believe his name was. He won $1 million Australian. He double faulted. So there is some moments you're like, did you really do that on purpose? Like, maybe you threw that point. But you ultimately end up with some really fascinating stuff, like Iga taking on Flavio Cobolli for a point, right? She's never going to beat him in a 2 of 3 sets. But on one point, not only can she win, but she can kind of make him look dumb. And it was just amazing to see, like, Anisimova beat Medvedev on a point. Anyway, this guy from Australia won it. So it was pretty cool, man. I thought that was like the best thing tennis ever came up with, was this 1 point slam. Okay. We should probably start with, before we even talk about this this tournament itself. Drew, you're usually great at this. Do you have any like overriding themes for the entire calendar year?
Well, the biggest story in men's tennis is that Carlos Alcaraz changed coaches, and the left tail or right tail, depending on who you are, outcome is that Sinner just wins all the slams. So that's interesting to me. I don't know. I really don't know anything about what's going on with his and with the change. But I do want to kind of give a hat tip to JCF for what I thought was pretty clearly the best like strategic in-game communication with the player for getting back into matches, like metering and, you know, I can only imagine how good is his pre-match you know, kind of consultation was, but I hold him up among the highest as far as tennis coaching goes. And I would be pretty surprised if this ultimately bears fruit as far as an improvement for Alcaraz, even if he just did need another voice or a new voice or something else. So
you would be surprised if it did end up an improvement.
I would be, yes.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden we're splitting the slams, might not be the reality we live in this year. It might be a little more lopsided. You know, outside of the story of who's getting which slam between the two best men in the world, I don't see, you know, it feels like, you know, the pack is fading even more aggressively, which is crazy to say, because it was like the whole setup last year was, you know, for all of the slam talk we did was not very flattering to players 3 through 128. So the gap feels like it's growing, and I don't know.
The men's slam.
Just a tune in. Yeah, the women's starts on Sunday, and the men's starts on January 30th this year, or January 31st, whatever. maybe Sunday the 1st, actually. Anyway, I'm sorry. It is the final on Sunday, the 1st, February. Ooh, we got a February finish in the first time in a long time, I guess. I think if you want to macro into kind of upside, you're looking for Sinner potentially winning 3 or 4. Those are some big prices.
I bet Sinner to win exactly 3. Exactly.
That's interesting.
If he wins 4, he beats me.
Yeah, right. So like he wins Australia, he wins French, Bublik wins Wimbledon, and he wins the U.S. Open.
Okay, I'll take that. Good script. I only, by the way, my the price I got on that plus 450 wasn't okay. nearly what I would have wanted it to be. And I bet Iga to win two exactly at plus 350. So that's a story for another time.
That's but a tough one because if he wins the first three, then the no price all of a sudden is going to be unhedgeable in the U.S. Open.
That's right. Absolutely. Zach, any thoughts from you just as a season-long thing?
Yeah, I mean, like with those two, it's one of them could get the career Grand Slam this year, or it's going to be, you know, Alcaraz looking forward at the Australian and Sinner looking forward at the French. So that'll be interesting. And just kind of expanding on like the JCF stuff, I think that like the most reliable reporting that we saw was essentially that like Alcaraz's dad pushed him out a little bit. And like, you know, some of it was just the meshing of personalities with him in the camp. I think that they think that Alcaraz needs those trips to Ibiza after, you know, tournaments to kind of unwind. And Ferrero didn't really like that. He wants him to be all tennis all the time. And I think that, you know, it was a really late decision because there was some contract stuff at play too. But the most interesting tidbit that I saw out of that, you know, kind of drama was that they wanted to hire Andy Murray 2 years ago before Djokovic did. And Djokovic got to him first, and that is why Ferrero was extended for another year.
Really?
Yeah.
I did not hear that. You're right about the timing, right? Usually if you do something, by the way, JCF is Drew and Zach's cool way of saying Juan Carlos Berner, by the way. So we've probably said it. But yeah, when you make a move like that, it's typically right after the ATP Finals, or really even before the ATP Finals, right? You don't really care that much about that if you're at that level. And it took all winter long, basically, just like a minute before this tournament started for that breakup to happen. So yeah, it's pretty interesting. And I agree with everything that Drew was saying about the fact that this makes the top, you know, maybe it's not two above all. Maybe it still is two above all, but maybe it's weighted towards Sinner now in a way that it hasn't been. Only time will tell,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. There's a world that's 1A, 1B, 3 through 128. And then there's a world where it's 1 gap two, gap three through 128.
Who's the third best men's tennis player in the world?
I was going to bring that up as like, how fast does it become Fonseca would have been my story for, you know, the outside of those two.
Did we get ahead of ourselves with him last year? Probably.
I don't think so. I think that his first year on tour, like first full year on tour, stacked up really well with some of these guys, like historically. So I think he's going to end up there. It's just a matter of, like I said, like how quickly will it be? I think towards the end of this season, he might be, you know, a really special player.
I think he'll get there. I wonder if we got ahead of our skis a little bit, as they say.
I kind of can't believe this, but my numbers say it's whatever is left of Djokovic, which seems wrong.
Oh, that's exactly what you're saying. Actually, you know what? It's Djokovic, and it's also on hard courts anyway. It's Medvedev and Dimonor also, but that's just hard courts. Somewhere in that group.
Yeah. But, oof, yeah. Man. It's
not Fonseca, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a whole cluster of guys who are between 19 and 24. And if you're giving me more than one pick, I'm just going to put them all in a bucket and say one of them breaks through and wins a couple Masters and finishes third. Right? It could be Musetti. It could be Shelton, Draper. Draper's too injury prone to realistically sustain winning for long enough to get that nod, but his ceiling is certainly worthy of consideration for top three. Fonseca is certainly in the mix there. Probably drawing the line there.
I'm
curious to see what happens of Jakob Mensik.
Yeah.
His ace percentage is like so outrageous. We could blink and, you know, I don't want to spoil the pod coming up, but we could blink and he could be deep into week two and people are learning about his game. And he could rise pretty quickly. I'm curious of what, I don't know. I don't know what to make of Felix Auger-Aliassime's career. I don't know if he only plays really, really well when the lights are not bright and that's when I'm not watching. And so he accrues all this awesome data that I then look and I'm like, what? What is he doing here?
He got to the semis of the U.S. Open though, right? That was his biggest slam performance.
He's got there twice, right?
Twice, is it? Yeah.
In his career, yeah. But I don't know. It feels like he accrues great statistics in garbage time when I'm not paying attention. So, you know, he could, but that said, he could have turned a corner or whatever was keeping him from finding another level. So I would put him in the bucket of could finish third.
Zach Fonseca is your guy, you think? Yeah.
I think by the end of the year, we'll be talking about Fonseca as the third best player. I don't know how fast it'll be, but I do think that he will be viewed as the third best player, or at least, you know, the one that we're talking about heading into 2027 with the potential to win a slam.
Have you seen like the physical step forward for him?
Well, that's what I want to see. Like that's where I think the last thing is, like, you know, improving physically, improving the movement. I think all of that's what we need to see this year.
Okay.
All right. Well, the draw is out. The draw came out yesterday, or I should say yesterday, our time, but this morning, Melbourne time. And let's just break this down. So Q1, some of the names, which is Carlitos is quarter. Carlos Alcaraz, Tommy Paul is in there. Alexander Bublik, who you mentioned. Alex de Minaur, Davidovich Fokina, if you want to keep going down that list, but that's about as low as I'll go there. Q2 has Medvedev is actually the short shot. By the way, Alcaraz, prohibitive favorite in Q1, I think $5 favorite. Medvedev is just shorter than Zverev in Q2. I was hoping he would be longer, Medvedev, but he's not. Rublev also in there, Lerner Tien, Ogier Aliassime, as you mentioned. Q3 is the Djokovic Fritz quarter, but also includes Musetti, Mahach, and Dimitrov. And Q4 is the Sinner quarter, which has Shelton, Umber, Ruud, Hachinov, and Fonseca in there. Are we throwing Q1 and Q4 out as unbettable because of Carlitos and Sinner? Let's just start there.
I'm not. I don't know.
I'm not either. Q4 is the quarter of death because Sinner's in there.
Yeah. I have Sinner. I don't think there's any chance Sinner loses before
Musetti's. Q1 though.
Yeah.
I don't want to just have a whole pod dumping on Alcaraz because he's such a fun player and I hope he doesn't suck this year. But, you know, of the guys who's likely to make the final, Sinner is much more likely. Of the guys that's likely to win their corner, in my opinion, Sinner is much more likely. These conditions are the toughest for Alcaraz to exercise his advantages over the field. And he has also shown more of a likelihood of just sort of airmailing early round performance that could cost him an early exit. Like I think, you know, it doesn't even matter like who the opponent is that's ousting him. Like if his game is not sharp on a given day, like he can play himself out of a match for sure. So, you know, I would say that it's at this type of price and rating for Alcaraz, it does kind of fuel my fire to get involved with some of the guys who I think have pretty high ceilings, and that doesn't include de Minaur. Because if that's your quarterfinal, it's probably Alcaraz and Straits. I kind of like Bublik at price in Q1 to do something weird.
What number are you seeing on him? Because I don't see him on DraftKings posted right at this moment. It was this morning, but I don't see it anymore.
10-1.
10-1 on Alexander Bublik, who, for those who missed it, the second half of last calendar year found his game in a large way. That potential was always there. He was always sort of a malcontent throughout his career, making fun of clay, thinking, you know, thinking that it's a ridiculous surface, all kinds of comments. But he really found his hardcore game, always knew it was there. And so 10-1 on Bublik to win quarter one, the Alcaraz quarter. You said you also would play someone else there, Zach?
I wouldn't play anybody else, but I just don't think, like, I don't think Alcaraz is a good bet to make the semis, and I don't think it's a sure thing that he ends up in the finals against Sinner. I think that, I don't want to spoil too much of what I have in quarter two, but I do think that there are some really tough matchups for Alcaraz. Like, starting with the third round, like, I'm not a big Sebastian Korda guy, but I think, you know, Korda, Paul, Demon, or Bublik, like, these are all matches that if Alcaraz is playing some of that sloppy tennis we've seen from him in the past, like in Miami, like, I could easily see him getting bounced.
It's a pretty tough quarter. Yep. Sinner got a lot of tough players in there, but he's Sinner, so he's going to beat them all. But it's like Shelton, Umber, Ruud, Hachinov, Fonseca. It's like they're all wasted in that quarter, it feels like. Not that all of them could have had a shot at it.
The case for Bublik, by the way, is pretty straightforward. He is, his ace percentage right now is like 15%, which is pretty outrageous. Like he's service feeling it. It's nasty. He's a big guy. He doesn't have great movement, but you don't need it at Melbourne. So he's like top eight in service points won right now. He's going to be in a lot of tie breaks, but I don't hate his path.
When last we saw Bublik, or when last one most people saw Bublik, it was he was crushing Tommy Paul at the U.S. Open. And then the next match, Sinner destroyed him. And at net, Bublik says to Sinner, "I'm not even that bad. Like, what are you doing?" that's the talent discrepancy, Sinner and everybody else now, as great as Bublik is. But Bublik is not in Sinner's quarter. He's in Alcaraz. So there you go. 10-1. Q2, Zach, you start because you said you had some there.
Yeah, I have Medvedev to win the quarter, and I have Medvedev 30-1 to win the tournament, which is really my way of playing Medvedev to make the final. And I'm going to look for ways to monetize that, because I was not happy with the prices I saw for him to make the final. But I do think Medvedev has kind of started to turn a corner back to where he was a couple of years ago. It's not going to be fully there, because I do think he has some like actual shoulder problems that have prevented him from, you know, getting to be like an elite server again. But like the serve has been a little bit better over the last 52 weeks. And I thought that he played really well, you know, start the season here. And I do think that, you know, the coaching change and all of that shows that he's still at least very motivated and taking this very seriously. And I think he has a really good draw. So I really do think there's a chance that he ends up facing Sinner in the final. And that exact I saw at 16-1 too.
Mm. You're right about Medvedev's pricing though. I was upset about his Q2 pricing, but you're right. To win his half of the bracket, it's Carlitos minus 230, and then it's Medvedev at only 4-1.
Yeah, it wasn't good enough for me.
Yeah, that's not good enough. Agree. Drew, Q2?
Well, I mean, I'm with you that Medvedev comes through, and you know what you got going for you if you want him to go deeper. He never won here.
Never won here. Can you explain to this audience what you mean?
Yeah. If you're listening to this podcast and you don't already know about this, I'm about to blow your mind. He's won 22 titles on the ATP tour, and they have been in 22 different tournaments, which is absurd. One for a long time we'll ever see this. Probably, I can't even imagine how we got it's here. I remember hearing this when he was like 10 tournaments in, and being like, "Damn." Like, holy shit. Like, oh, this guy is just, how is he doing this? Like, you figure, you know, the kind of secret sauce of my handicap is literally like, how well have you played here in years past? Because that is usually instructive of, you know, the conditions, the environment, your preparation, all of it went well. Right. And so you typically see players who thrive at given venues, given tournaments. Sometimes it's just motivation because they're defending points. For him to have never backed up a title is insane.
It's incredible. I said to you off air the other day, I was like, if you tried to do this, you couldn't do this, right?
You couldn't.
A different place every time. Tennis players don't typically have that kind of career. Yeah, and what was his comment? He was like, they got to make more tournaments so I can win more. Yeah.
I mean, there's only like 34, 35 cities on the ATP tour, or 35 right. like hard court stops. Right. He's not going to win a clay tournament, I guess. I mean, he won one, but he's probably not going to win another one. He's running out of cities with hardcore tournaments that he hasn't already won. And this is one of them. I will say he famously did not win this title twice.
Oh, right.
He almost did.
Yeah.
But he didn't. The ghost will be very much in his head, in my opinion, if he's up a set or two against Sinner in the final. So
I fell asleep thinking that he won, and it was against Nadal.
Nadal. Oh my God, dude. He was up 4-2 in the third. I'm almost sure. He was up a break and up 2-0, up a break in the third, and Nadal could barely move. He had like an ab tear or something insane, and he came back to win very improbably. That will go down as one of the wilder slam results of all time. But that said, Medvedev still has unfinished business here.
Unfinished business, and I got him third behind Sinner and Alcaraz in terms of raw numbers. By the way, Ben Shelton is trending, so I was like curious why he's trending. Oh, he lost to Baez, so the Twitter match-fixing crowd is out about Ben Shelton today. Or he just wanted to get to Melbourne is maybe perhaps the bigger headline of that. Or he just lost about Baez, either way. Q3, I have a play. I haven't made this bet yet, but I think I'm going to. Any guesses?
This is fun.
I'll take Tsitsipas to win.
No. God. No.
What kind of price point are we talking about?
Pretty cool single digits. Fairly cool single digits.
Well, I mean, Fritz would have been the kind of easy guess just because his service numbers have been just as good as you would imagine, despite the fact that he hasn't really backed it up with results. I was kind of, you know, I kind of spoiled this part of the podcast. Jakub Mensik for me at 16-1 is a good bet here just because I don't know if this is fueled by playing a little bit lower competition or what, but I was pretty, my eyes popped when I saw him at 16% ace percentage last 52. That's kind of bananas. He's not winning service points at the same clip that you would expect if you're hitting that many aces. So I'm not sure what's going on with him strategy wise, if he is not getting a free point. He's so young, if he looks surprisingly live, I'm not going to be surprised just considering that he is serving that effectively.
Mensik, one of these players that when he first broke out on the scene, his numbers preceded his prices.
Yeah.
And he was just a boon for betting him.
I think he still is, really.
Yeah.
Let me see what Sackman has him for quarterfinalist here. He's got him. Yeah, my numbers are so close to Sackman's at this point. I don't know that I have much of an edge on the market if anyone else is using them. He's got Mensik 6% to win QF. I'm a little better than that.
Which numbers are these, Drew, that you're quoting here?
Tennis Abstracts, Australian Open men's forecast. He is way, way, way out there on Djokovic because he's not, in my opinion, doing enough time decay for kind of current form. It's still reflecting a lot of the past greatness. But so he's got Djokovic at 71% to win the quarter. 54% to win the quarter, and then Mensik closer to 3, which I think is too low. But 16-1 for Mensik looks good to me to win Q3.
I took Musetti 6-1.
Musetti.
My hardcore numbers on him are really good, and he's had a pretty good start to the season here. Beat Rublev. Blanking on who else he beat. Like the way he's playing, I like that number. And I think as I look at that quarter, Dimitrov been hanging out with his girlfriend too much. You know what kind of scares me is Mahach. Kind of scares me a little bit. Fritz, Djokovic, obviously. But at the price, I like Musetti. I in that. By the way, I'm glad you brought up Tennis Abstract. I'm looking desperately for the tweet now because somebody during a numbers game this morning asked specifically about what it is that you look at with your tennis handicapping. They brought up Tennis Abstract. So there's some corroboration on it from Drew that he definitely is looking at that when handicapping tennis. Zach, you're more of a feel guy, right? You're just watching a lot of tennis.
I watch a lot, but I also use Tennis Abstract and Tennis Viz and Tennis Data Innovations. Like when you watch the matches and they tell you forehand quality, shot quality, stuff like that, I look at that a lot. So, I'm kind of always looking at data, but I do go on feel a lot. So this is a really weird quarter for me because Fritz and Musetti both, I would think that they had great chances, but both are kind of banged up right now.
Banged up. By the way, speaking of banged up, no Arthur Fies in this tournament. His back still acting up. No Jack Draper, as Drew mentioned, the arm injury, and no Holger Vitus Nodskov Rune with the Achilles injury still, which, knock on wood, I'm surprised more guys don't get these Achilles injuries, but Rune had one, so he's out of this.
If you're high on Musetti, that makes me feel even better about Bublik. I thought Bublik worked him in Hong Kong.
Yes, he did. Yep.
So Bublik maybe, interesting. Okay.
Well, if Musetti was in Q1, I would not be betting Musetti. I just don't feel like Q3 is there for the taking.
Okay.
And Djokovic, we'll see, right? What do we expect out of Djokovic? That he's a legit contender for a 25th slam or not really? Drew's already shaking his head. No.
I don't know what the plan is, man.
I'm just showing up for the slams, probably. But yeah,
I think it's just really hard for him to retire knowing that he's the third best player. So he's almost needs to be put out of his misery in a way that like people need to pass him or he's not going to go.
That sounds right. Yeah.
He can't be one or two. Well,
he's also making a lot of money, I'm sure. So he likes that, I know.
Yeah, maybe just want to hang out at home. I want to. I'm curious what you all think of some of these first round matches. I haven't looked at the first round matches or haven't handicapped them yet, but there are some unbelievable first round matches. I'm just like glancing at some of these. Zach and I were talking about this before we came on. Dimonor and Berrettini are playing first round. Diallo and Sasha Zverev in the first round. Just glancing down on some of these other ones. Giron is playing Lerner Tien in the first round, where Lerner Tien is a minus 189 favorite. Giron has had a good little run here on hard courts before the Australian Open. Who is Shelton playing again, Zach?
Umbert. Really good match.
It's a first round match. So some of these
ask Zach, who watches more tennis than me, does Lerner Tien pass the eye test?
Not for me. I don't like the way people talk about him at all. And I don't either. Total chump move too, playing the next gen ATP finals as like an older player and just running through it.
So interesting you guys bring that because somebody brought that up this morning on a tweet. They're like, what about Lerner Tien? So there you go. There's your answer.
What about him?
Mickelson plays Khachanov in the first round. I mean, that's a ridiculous. Baez, who just beat Shelton, is taking on Mpechi Paracard. Men's first round is bananas. By the way, this starts on Saturday our time, not Sunday. People should know as well.
Saturday night. Yep.
Saturday night. Yeah, because I'm used to the old school thing where we would watch football on a Sunday and then the Australian Open would start Sunday night. No longer. I think last year was the first year they went Saturday. Maybe I'm wrong about that. Anything else on the men's side? So bottom line is it's Sinner versus somebody and Sinner's winning it all.
Yeah, it's probably Sinner Alcaraz. Yeah. I don't want to overblow it, but
I think I've talked myself into Sinner over Medvedev exact 20-1.
Ooh. Where is that available?
Bet365. You actually don't even have to decide the winner. It's just who will play in the finals.
So a matchup.
Yep.
Sinner and Medvedev finals matchup.
What was the number?
20-1. Drew's running the numbers.
Yeah, that's a good bet.
Okay. Bet365. Whether you swear by Bet365 on these kinds of days, huh, Zach?
I like them and Bet Rivers. I think that they get stuff up the fastest and have the most options for tennis usually.
Mm. Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So 100% chance Sinner's there, and I got about a 12% chance Medvedev's there. So that's a good bet.
Okay. To the lady side, which is obviously not nearly as clear cut at the top. Aryna Sabalenka, number one player in the world. Iga Świątek, number two ranked player in the world. And then it's, we'll see as the season goes on. Will it be Coco Gauff? Will it be Jessie Pegula? Will it be Mira Andreeva? Is this the year she gets up to the top of tennis? Women's tennis has never been in a better place, never been as competitive, I would say, as it is now. And so many slam winners still exist on tour. Not that many of them are capable of winning slams anymore, but that's just the nature of that sport right now. Any season long women's thoughts, Zach, at all? Big questions.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a take for this season or just like the next 6-7 slams, but I think that like we're going to see an Anisimova win, and I think we're going to see a Linda Noskova win very soon. So those are the
we're
two
looking
that
at
I'm
the same notes. Okay, I love her quarter price in this one.
Yeah, I think anyway, she's so good. So I'm just kind of waiting for one of those two to break through and win one.
Well, Anisimova was in the last two slam finals. I think everybody's sort of expecting that. She got bageled by Iga at Wimbledon, and then she put up a really good fight against Sabalenka at the U.S. Open. So it is, and numbers-wise, I have her on hard courts in the top six comfortably with Świątek, Sabalenka, Pegula, Rybakina, and Osaka still lurking with really good numbers.
I laid the games with Sabalenka against Anisimova. Anisimova put up the perfect amount of fight. No more. I think that it won by the hook. I was like sweating the end there. But that was a really fun US Open final. And Anisimova's breakout last year was probably the story of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. Matty Keys winning the Australian Open. By the way, Madison Keys is the defending champion here. Went a whole career without winning a slam and finally won one last year. And it feels like she's one and done probably with slams, I'm guessing. But who knows? Remember, that was my Columbo thing last year, a year ago on this podcast. I'm like, what do you think about Matty Keys, by the way, before I leave here? She ends up winning. Okay. Yeah. Let's do these quarter by quarter on the ladies' side. Q1 is the Sabalenka quarter. Who is in there? Victoria Mboko is in there. Clara Towson, Katerina Alexandrova, Marta Kostyuk, who has had a spectacular early season on hard courts. Iva Jovic in there and Jasmine Paolini. Mm. Sabalenka and nobody else? Or is there a shot here?
I guess let me give a little quick sidebar on Sabalenka and kind of tie it into a macro thought as well. She should win a lot this year. She's at her peak. Her numbers have never been better. I know that it's really crowded in the women's pool. There are, you know, there are a lot of challenges. It's best of three. This isn't like, you know, if she was female center out there, I would still be like, but, you know, you wake up on the wrong side of the bed one day, shoulders hurting. You're not, serve's not going in, you double fall and you're in your head. Like, yeah, you can lose. So it's always a little more random on the women's side. But Sabalenka should win multiple slams this year, the quality that she's playing right now. And I don't know that she will, because again, she does have like rando demons, but the fact that she is kind of at the peak of her ELO of like right now, should be concerning for the rest of the women's tour. And I don't know that I would feel anywhere close to as confident firing on a season long titles outright for her to do well this year. But I think there's absolutely a world where, you know, she takes home a lot of hardware. So I think in general, Sabalenka's probably going to start getting the type of market respect that we saw from Iga from a couple years ago.
Sabalenka with four slams now, career number one player in the world. She's been number one for a while now. Iga with six slams, going for the career slam here at the Australian Open as the number two player in the world. What about that quarter, Drew or Zach? If there's another player who wins it, who is it?
I would say Kostyuk. I mean,
it's a tough quarter.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I think Kostyuk, you're right.
Kostyuk, who did lose to Sabalenka here recently, but, you know, again, as far as putting up a fight, put up a pretty good fight, but crushed some players, some really good players before that on her way to playing Sabalenka. Anyone, if you had to pick Drew, or you just don't see it, period?
Well, I mean, Kostyuk obviously leveled up based on the way she played so far this year. That's notable. She's not like so like mature and old that should surprise anyone. She's only 23 and a half. Yeah. I have her on the fringes of the top 10 right now. She's definitely like probably the hardest matchup for Sabalenka in here. The second seeded player in here, Paolini, would probably be my fifth choice in this section of the draw, which is kind of, again, speaking to how good it is, how deep it is. Townsend can play, although I haven't seen her do anything special in a long time. Alexandrova's can serve, so she could ultimately surprise. She's at like top six in terms of service points won. It looks even better on hard court for her. She's hitting aces at a pretty high clip, so Alexandrova's going to be a tough out. That the probably the best match in that quarter is going to be Alexandrova Kostyuk. If you wanted to take a flyer on somebody to break out this year, it's clearly Mboko. I know that I'm not convinced she's fully healthy from the wrist injury she sustained in August, but if she is fully healthy and we just don't know, then she's good enough to be there in second week of this tournament. So Yeah, I think I would take all four of the, I mean, obviously Sabalenka one, and then 2, 3, 4 in some order. Kostyuk, Alexandrova, Mboko, and then five would be Paolini, which is amazing. Yeah, good. Yeah. There's going to be great matches out of Q1, and Sabalenka probably comes through without losing a set.
That is exactly the order I have them in, with the exception of Paolini and Mboko being flipped. But I also have Kostyuk as the 12th best player on hard courts. Wow. Though I don't know how Marie Buskova got in as 11th, so I don't know. My number might be a little crazy right there.
It's probably just an indexing error.
Yeah, but that's that. It corroborates what you're saying. She's right up there, just on the cusp of the rest of the big names in tennis, in women's tennis. Yeah, I think it's Sabalenka's, but I would go Kostyuk too. What about Iva Jovic? Too early for her?
No. She's been playing great this year.
Yeah,
her numbers look good. Yeah, I'm not running to get involved in any of these phenoms, just because the quality, you know, the time and place to be like taking shots on the next gen is when like you don't really believe in the powers, the top of the tour, and the top of the tour right now is not to be doubted. They are very, very good.
Well, Q2, speaking of top of the tour, Q2 is the Coco Gauff Berea Andreeva quarter. Pick your whoever you want to call it's quarter, is the top name here. Coco Gauff, Mira Andreeva, Karolina Muchova, Elina Svitolina, Marketa Vondrousova, Diana Schneider, Maria Sakkari, who is even playing great tennis now all of a sudden, after looking like her career was donezo, really, for much of last year. That's a brutal quarter. Where are you on Coco now, Drew? What's your level?
Her service just isn't good enough to win here.
Yeah,
if she wins the Australian Open with numbers like this, she's beating me. I'm no interest with this type of service win percentage, this type of ace, this number, the double fault percentage. Like you can't give away points. You can't not have more free points and expect to get wins in a field that's this tough on a surface this fast. So no thanks.
Zach, same thing?
Yeah. Yeah, she can and like maybe will like Iowa Hawkeyes herself to like a French Open title again, but I don't think she's going to win here.
That's a great way to put it, because her defense is now better than Iga's in terms of, that being a strength, but her offense is not good enough.
Iowa Hawkeyes her ways to another title somewhere. So who is it? Who's the Q2 winner?
I have an old favorite. I have Muchova.
Yeah, me too.
I just can't
can't not, man. She's been playing great.
She is.
At least she's not hurt that right now.
in the history that we've been doing this, Drew, and time with Zach as well, but as long as we've been doing this, have we picked anybody who's not like at the top of the sport more than Muchova in quarters and some of these?
Yeah, I mean, we picked Keys a lot. And then eventually we're like, I guess she still has a chance and she wins. Muchova won some serious money. The year that she went to the French Open final, she should have beat Iga here.
Double faulted.
If we're using clear eyes and not Iga shaded sunglasses, she should have won that title.
Here's exactly what I was saying out loud watching. I was going,
although she was that the year where she had no business beating Sabalenka in the semis, did. That was a weird year. But yeah, Muchova's got game, and why can't she? This isn't that tough of a quarter.
You don't think it's that tough of a quarter?
Okay. I don't think so.
No. All right,
I'm not spooked by any of the kind of middle class here.
I am. I think Svitolina, Vondrousova, names like that, I think they have it in them for deep runs. Now, whether it happens or not, your guess is as good as mine. Where do you stand on Mira Andreeva, both of you, right now?
She looks like the type of player who's minus 500 against Sakkari in round two and loses.
Yeah.
I don't know why I feel that way, but like I'm not seeing the growth and the step forward. And she looks like she's plateaued physically as well. So I don't know. I'm not sure she takes a big step forward this year. I'd love to see it.
Plateau physically. Let me try to say it a different way. Just doesn't look all that athletic out there sometimes, or the build doesn't look athletic. Like what are you getting at exactly?
I mean, yeah, I plateaued athletically as in like she was like coming into her like adult strength.
Yes.
And didn't really, and playing relatively little bit difficult to plan for tennis, which I think got her some surprising victories. You know, she overpowered a lot of known players in big moments and big tournaments, which helped really kind of fire her elevation. She won Indian Wells last year very convincingly. And it was like, okay, like now your mental, you know, kind of aptitude for winning a tennis match is catching up to the physical tool set you got. And for whatever reason, like in order to take it another step, you either need to get better, even better physically, or get even better mentally. And it feels like she's stuck at where she was at Indian Wells last year, if not regressed a little bit. So I would like to see her succeed. I would like to see her be kind of in the mix as a top four-ish player in the women's tour. But I also feel like this type of tournament, this early in the season, without a lot of reps, with some of the rust that she showed in the warm-up events, somebody like Zachary could surprise her.
This is the quirky thing about tennis, right? People are familiar that golf waits till, you know, the Masters, the Players Championship and the Masters a few months into the golf season. But tennis, it's like we start 3 weeks into like slam.
Here we go. We're into it.
Zach Andreeva, also, you feel that way as well?
It's the mental thing for me as well. Like, I think it's going to happen. I might need to see it happen before I believe it's going to again. So like, I might not be on her until she actually wins one. But I saw a quote the other day where she said that she prefers playing in like a hostile environment as opposed to a friendly one. And I'm like, are you sure about that? Did you watch Lois Poisson or whatever?
That is not correct. Yeah, that is definitely not correct.
Yeah, like she is not a crowd silencer. So I'm surprised she said that.
it's amazing. We had Rick Gaiman on talking about golf the other day on the radio side, and he was talking about Colin Morikawa, and his line was, and it stuck with me because this applies to someone like Andreeva. His line was, Morikawa is the worst narrator of his own career. And that's what we're talking about with Andreeva. All right. So Muhova is our girl there in Q2. I would agree with that, by the way.
Not likely to make a run here because her service isn't strong enough, but if there's a woman in the quarter two who we end up bringing up on the other three podcasts, it's probably Ayala. Game is pretty sophisticated for her age, and she could come along this year and be a problem, particularly on clay, the way her numbers look to me, at least, like she could be a factor. Maybe Indian Wells even. I wouldn't be surprised. So put a little pin on her and follow her. If she does well here, that's a sign to buy for the future. Because this is not a good fit for her.
Alexander Ayala, who burst onto the scene last year by beating Iga in Miami, a tournament that Iga had won before. And it was like the tennis, what was the equivalent of that? I mean, somebody that had absolutely zero chance prior to that match, the way that we thought about Ayala. And then from that point on, it wasn't just that match. He had a great year of tennis and won a tournament. First Filipino winner ever. Filipino woman ever to win a tournament on the tour.
She should have won too.
Should have won too.
She should have won Eastbourne, but I think she lost in deciding tiebreak. A 10-point decider.
Eastbourne, the old 3-week run-up to Wimbledon on grass.
The Taylor Fritz Invitational.
That's right. The one where the building is right on the court, basically? Was that the one? Is that Eastbourne? One of those is beautiful, where like the brick building is like basically on the... On the doubles
alley.
That's
Queens.
That's Queens. That's right. All right, Q3, I think I have a bet. This is
Eastbourne is the one with the seagulls. That's how the Taylor Fritz Invitational has, like, it's like at the shore. You know, it's like the holiday spot for all the London folks. They go out to Eastbourne. And it's just incessant seagulls on the broadcast.
That's right. Eastbourne. If anyone is listening to this in England, they will have to check me on this, but I remember somebody saying Eastbourne, not the most beautiful place in the world.
It's their beach, though. It's like Jersey
City.
Their beach.
Q3, I think I have a play. This is Amanda Nisimova, who's the short shot to win this quarter. The aforementioned Linda Noskova is in there as well. Madison Keys, the defending champion, is in there. I just want to mention Lila because I like Lila Fernandez. She's in there as well. But Jessie Pegula is in there. And Jesse Pegula at 4-1 is interesting to me because every time we look up, she doesn't get a lot of mention. She doesn't get considered at the, like the elite of the elite, right behind the elite, usually like, you know, the fifth best player in the world kind of thing. And yet you look up at the numbers and I got it as Swiatek, Sabalenka and Pegula, 1, 2, 3 on hard still. That's what I have. So to me, there's value on her still. She is the most consistent player on tour.
What was your 1, 2, 3 again?
Swiatek, Sabalenka, Pegula, Rybakina is 1, 2, 3, 4. And then Osaka 5 and Anisimova 6. Hmm. What do you got?
I have Sabalenka, Gap, Rybakina, Iga pretty close for hard. We'll get to that, I guess, in a second. I don't want to spoil it. Q3 is kind of boring. Take a flyer on Noskova.
Here it comes, people. Zach already warned me this was coming.
Yeah.
What's the Noskova case for you? I'm curious.
I don't have Noskova here. I actually, I just think it's going to happen. Gil was talking about my dog barking. That's the. I warned the dog was going to bark at some point. No, I have two plays to win this tournament. And one of them is Anisimova. So,
okay,
yeah.
What I was talking about was I was. You said you had something. You think the best bet is, okay, and I think that's coming up right here. We go.
I think that we should wait till after quarter four. It's a tournament play as well.
Okay. Well, I'll do a little deeper analysis then for Q3. Anisimova, I think, needs more time to kind of ramp up because of how hard and long she played into last season and that being relatively new for her. If she does well here, it will be awesome. Zach's kind of general vibe of she's ready to pop, she's ready to win a title at the slam level is very true. My guess is this is too early in the season considering how much she played. I've lost count of how many times there's been sort of a breakout, an obvious breakout player on a given year. Like, this player is taking the next step. I know it. And then they played too much into the fall and underwhelming here. And to me, Anisimova's in that category, despite her very good numbers. I don't see enough power in her from her, you know, from the standpoint of service points wins is under 60%. That's not good enough. She's only getting 5% of her, you know, ace percentage. That's not going to be a lot of free points. She's going to be in some fights. She's going to take some damage. This could, you know, depending on the weather, this could be a tough, you know, and she's not going to get like premier nighttime spots to play probably. So she could be in a little bit of harm's way here. I don't really care for any of the like local challengers in the bottom half of her draw. I think she got a really nice 1, 2, 3 to get to round four. But Noskova at that point could give her a tough time if that's you know, if she's taken any damage to that point. And then you know, Pegula, she's never solved Pegula. I feel like she's winless against Pegula. And so if that's your Q3 final, I'm probably on Jess there.
Yep. I nod. I think Pegula's the value there.
What's the Anisimova case besides just it's time?
I mean, that is real. It's really like, I don't know. You had, I think, Rick Rungood on a numbers game. And like, he said that you should bet Scottie Scheffler every tournament or you should it. And I'm like, at the point where I'm like, I think I should just bet Anisimova the next four majors and hope she wins one and not be out, you know, not miss the boat if she does.
Yeah. The old golf prevent self-loathing strategy of betting Scheffler every time.
Hey, to win at least one is plus 225 for her. Mm.
Drew, do you mean time is not enough reasoning for you? Is that what you're saying?
I mean, it is. I don't disagree with that. Yeah. It's just the I kind of need to see proof that she can play as much tennis as she played in the second half of 2025, take a quick off season and be in peak form out of the gate. That's a really tough thing to do if you haven't done it before.
Let's talk about Q4. Let's talk about, unless you have anything else to Q3. Q4, Swiatek, Rybakina, Bencic, and Osaka. I don't know that there's another name I need to mention.
Those are my 2, 3, and 5th best chances to win if we didn't, before we had the draw.
Fifth being Osaka.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's, again, that's according to my numbers, as I said earlier, that is my, oh, in terms of Iga, Rybakina, and Osaka, that is my 1, 4, and 5. Yeah.
With them all in the same category, with them all in the same quarter, those probabilities get halved.
Yep.
This is a really tough quarter. This is the quarter of death. Congratulations to the WTA. This is the eighth or ninth consecutive podcast where we declare Iga's gotten the quarter of death.
That's right.
I don't know how. She got to fix her draw karma, man. I don't know what this is, but
didn't she have a streak where she was getting the best of it for a little while? Not this long though. I think it was like 3 or 4 in a row that were good. Now it's like 9 in a row, terrible.
That was like 2021, it feels like, at this point, a million years ago. For being the 2 seed, this is doesn't really feel fair. I don't know what to do with Rybakina, honestly, because her numbers are so outrageous on this court and in fast hard court conditions. But I also have probably the least amount of trust in her, you know, belief in her, of anyone who has this kind of rare air type of numbers. So I don't really know what to do here. I'm a little paralyzed betting Q4, if we're being honest. I don't think Osaka's going to win, but she can make life difficult for Iga, which could open the door for Rybakina. Bencic is also very tough. So,
Bencic, you think? She was the fourth name for me.
If it's not Rybakina, Bencic, Iga, Osaka in the quarterfinals of Q4, then I'd be a little surprised.
Me too.
And if that is your quarterfinals, you are in Melbourne. If you're in Melbourne and you're looking for buy tickets, go on the day that the women's Q4 is playing the fourth round. Like, holy smokes, you're going to get a show. Those are potentially sick. Osaka Iga remains one of the best matches we've had in the last 3 years. Rybakina Bencic would be a perfect kind of matchup of power and finesse. There's going to be some great tennis out of Q4, and I don't know, man.
The Osaka Iga match Drew is referring to is the French Open match 2 years ago, where it was midweek for us, right? It was midweek for everybody. It's not that different elsewhere. It was midweek for
Tuesday. No.
It was like a Tuesday or a Wednesday, right?
It was Tuesday for us. I don't know if it was a Tuesday for
I don't know. It's Tuesday for them too at night. It was a Tuesday morning for us, and Osaka was giving Iga everything, and she almost won that. And then Iga from the dead. It was just an amazing. And Iga went on to win the French.
Nobody knew Osaka had that in her at the time. I'm fully prepared. I don't think there's, you know how like you have distributions and bands around like parameters. I don't think the bands around Osaka could be any wider. Like, I think she could show up and be like, holy hell, this is unbeatable player. She could actually wildly underwhelm this year, and I wouldn't be surprised either way.
How will, if she never wins another slam, how will history look at Osaka? Who won 4 hard court slams, 2 Aussies, 2 US Opens really quickly, right? In a 3-year period of time, I believe it was. And then went off and had a baby and then, you know, sort of has shown flashes of that since, I would say. If she never wins another, how does history look at her?
I know how I'll remember her.
Okay. How's that?
Million years ago, I was doing content for SBR. Remember the sports book review website that used to have odds? And, you know, if you had beef with Faraway Place, which was taking your action, you took it to the forums and got justice. We were previewing tennis.
And Foistel would take care of it for you, that kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And they had just some sort of absolute knack. It was just a perfect ability to like nail the SEO on YouTube at the time with the names of the players we were talking about that got like just absurd views. Like I cannot believe this many people tuned in to watch me holding my phone talking into like, you know, a Skype, you know, about a tennis match. Osaka made a run, first ever, final. She's playing Serena Williams. We do a preview of Osaka Serena Williams, and I was like, I think my handicap was roughly Osaka has no chance. None. She will not win this match. She might as well. Like, she's just there. She's playing against her hero, blah, blah, blah. Like just every soft qualitative angle you could come up with. She's just no chance.
Soft qualitative bullshit you come up with. That's right.
It's like she's just gonna, I hope she enjoys the experience and she's not too embarrassed. It was kind of this spin that I was going with there. I had massive futures on Serena. I was like, this is the easiest money I've ever made. and that clip went like absurdly viral on YouTube.
Oh no.
Because it was like Serena Osaka US Open Women's Final. Right. Like that was like the way it was like put into the algorithm. And so like millions of people are like looking this up after the fact, because that was where Serena had like the temper tantrum and like lost her mind on the court and Osaka beat her soundly. And so basically everybody flocks to YouTube looking for clips of the temper tantrum and wants to know what happens and finds this clip of me being like, Osaka has no chance to win. And to this day, that is the most watched content that I've ever put out into the universe. I know for a fact it was millions of people. And I've never been more wrong. So,
well, I'm glad I asked.
I will never in my life look past Osaka as a potential champion.
You know what I hate about that?
Lesson learned.
Besides your plight and how it happened to you, is that then people were giving Serena credit for like comforting a crying Naomi Osaka. You caused her to cry. I can't. The whole revisionist history of that event kills me.
Yeah, history that will remember her very, very kindly, I think, because of the excellence she showed over that short window and first, kind of breakthrough female athlete from Japan. Like she has kind of Q score like worldwide, name brand breakthrough that I think people are just going to have to respect.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Maybe she never wins again.
She's only 28. Been around forever, but she's only 28 years old. Which used to be an old timer back in the day, but not anymore.
Considering the way the French media treated her at French Open, it's an old 28.
Yeah. You're talking about the mental health?
Yeah, I'm being sarcastic. I think she overblew that aggressively pretty significantly.
Yeah. Okay, Zach, I'm braced. What's the big? You said the best way to bet this tournament. You teased it early.
Well, I do have Rybakina to win this tournament at +800, so I should say that. But I am pretty intrigued by Sabalenka and Iga versus the field, and the field is -135. It's at FanDuel. That feels like a really good price for like if this is women's tennis. I don't know. It's like I don't think that Iga is that likely to win, and I think that Sabalenka could lose to anyone.
-135 for everybody but Iga and Aryna Sabalenka.
Yep.
The math is going to be really tough to get out of that if either of them makes the final.
Yeah.
And if they both make the final, they'd be already lost. That's another problem with that one. Is like usually,
Zach, but if they meet in the finals, that bet's not one.
You're in trouble. You're in trouble. No, either one of them in the finals against not the other one is going to be like -500, like -400, -400.
Somewhat likely that both of them are not in the final.
What was Sabalenka and Anisimova? That was shorter than 500, I guess.
Ooh, I don't know.
That was like -250, -300, I think. It was in that range. So maybe it'll be a shorter and you won't be that under. But I don't love the price enough on Sabalenka to win this one, but I do think she is a very likely winner here. So I kind of want to put that one in pocket and go with some Grand Slam specials.
What'd you do? You haven't bet anything yet or no? Or are you thinking of them?
I haven't gotten staked on this yet, but I like the Sabalenka calendar slam.
the Sabalenka calendar, meaning winning all four slams.
Yeah. It's 35 wow. to 1, 40 to 1, something like that.
What is
like
it?
35, 40 to 1.
35 to 1.
Something like that.
You know, they play a clay tournament as part of those four. You're aware of that? Eagle lurking? You know that? You're aware of that?
I thought she won last year.
Or
she
a pro Coco crowd.
She thought she won last year. Based on her comments post-match, I think she thought she won the French Open final.
Oh, yeah. Of course, she was making all the excuses in the world. Like, she gave it to Coco. That, and I was like, man, look in the mirror. Ego was hitting the ball into the stands against you in the semis. Like, you thought that was you? You know, it's like, here's the thing about tennis. As Todd Wishnev reminds me, part of it is you have to get the ball in the court of play also. I took Osaka at 19 to 1. I took a flyer on her at 19 to 1. I like the number. I took Jesse Pegula at 31 to 1 to win it as well. And I took Iga at plus 525. Her number drifted once the draw came out. So that was enough for me to finally play it. I was going to actually have a slam and not play Iga, but now I'm back in. So I'm on those. And then my season longs, as I mentioned, Jannik Sinner to win three exactly at plus 450 and Iga to win two at plus 450, pardon me, and Iga to win two at plus 350.
Those are fun.
So, yeah. But I, on the men's side, besides Musetti, I got nothing. Nothing with this draw because it's top heavy, right? So for me, nothing. I like, Zach, I like your Medvedev versus Sinner matchup, 20 to 1 at Bet365, you said?
Yep, 20 to 1.
I dig it. All right, guys. Anything else to add? Anything we missed?
I mean, Sinner was younger then, but Medvedev probably should have won that match if it weren't for the fact that he went five sets like six times in a row before that one.
Yes.
So I guess I'm not going to rule out Medvedev doing something awesome here. He's looked good. I think Jakub Mensah is your breakout Q3 potential winner. That's a fun long shot, 16 to 1. Yeah, and I think, to the degree we're talking about season long insane stuff, the Grand Slam special on Sinner to win three or more is plus 275. I think that's a great bet. I know you have three exactly.
Yeah.
That thread the needle a little bit.
Yeah.
But no one will stake me on Calendar Slam Sinner. And let me just explain real quick why Calendar Slam is a good bet right now for either of these players, Sabalenka and Sinner. They're correlated. Like this is correlated parlay, effectively. You're literally like, there's like, wait, you know, we don't really know what the, you know, how these players are going to be, you know, rated middle of the season. If Sabalenka wins this one convincingly, which there's scope for, that'll be now two in a row. Like the market's going to react. She will continue to get bet and support and get priced aggressively. Same with Sinner. Like if Carlos is not good in this tournament, like the rats are going to scurry off the ship real quick. And you're going to see minus 120, minus 150 ish types of prices at the French Open, which is presumably Carlos's best shot. You know, like there's definitely, there's scope for this to like snowball and the prices to just go one way. Now, all that said, both of them holding three going into Flushing, potentially choking, is extremely live. Like I cannot imagine how loud the roar will be between the years if you're holding the potential for a Calendar Slam.
Rod Laver, the last man to do a Calendar Slam, 1968, I want to say, and Steffi Graf, I believe, 1988, the last woman to do a Calendar Slam.
Man.
Little tennis. That's how rare it is, by the way. It just doesn't happen.
What were the years again?
68 and 88, I believe.
So we're due. Let's do some quick math. Oh, we're due.
I just wanted to say we were due.
Oh, before we wrap, by the way,
yes.
Kelly promised the people we would talk a little Australian wine.
Oh my God. Thank God.
If they made it this far, hour and 9 minutes in, congratulations.
Well, with us.
Here's Kelly your dessert.
Producer of the Members Game has a request of Drew. Like to say what the request is that you will comply with now?
Yeah, this is something that's not very widely discussed and something people are probably very curious of. But, you know, among the recognized, excellent wine growing regions worldwide, Australia is among them.
Really?
And people want to know what are the top wines to shop for if you're shopping for Australian wines. And I will tell you a couple things. You're going to get pretty dang close to the quality you would get from a Napa Cab. If you get a Cabernet from anywhere near Adelaide, South Australia is sort of the wine capital of the continent. And there are a number of really, really outstanding growers there. The most famous is Penfolds. They do Cabernet and they do Shiraz. And you might say, what the hell is Shiraz? Well, that's the Australian weird way that they describe Syrah, which of course is a very, very well-known French grape from the Southern Rhone. And so, yes, you can get your Shiraz, you can get your Cabernet Sauve, and they do a lot of amazing blends. And the reason it's worth noting Australian wine is because they are affordable. Top quality stuff there that, you know, will go toe-to-toe with anything you find in the States. Many things you will find in Europe, $20-$30 bottle tops. Penfolds is the exception. Like, they are so well-known worldwide. That stuff was like in the hundreds, but in general, anything from South Australia, Cab Syrah, Cab Shiraz or Cab Shiraz blends, are outstanding. Yeah, you can probably try it for under 10 if you're at your local proprietor and see what you think. Shiraz and what they're known for, like if as like a tasting, you can obviously find better Shiraz in France. You can obviously find better Cab in both Bordeaux and Napa. You don't find anyone else on earth blending those two together. And a lot of times when you blend those two together, you get like this real velvety mouthfeel that's like very pleasant. You know what I mean? It's like, whoa, this is rich. This is, you know, it's just like immediately makes you think like you're drinking a fancy, rich, you know, expensive wine. Goes great with food, in general, red meat. Goes great with burgers. Actually, I would put Shiraz up with a burger as your ideal pairing, honestly, with a burger, that or Malbec from Argentina. The name, if you're looking for something elite, is Penfolds. If you're looking for value that's like world class, try to find something from Longhorn Creek region. This is like for the wine hardos. Yes. Like, you're not going to find this at Total Wine and More or BevMo. You're certainly not going to find it at like Trader Joe's at the supermarket. If you're looking for like a particularly amazingly good wine from there that is like also still very affordable, Langhorn Creek is my top appellation there. And if you're hearing all this and you're like, Syrah, Cab, like, don't they have anything else good? Amazing Pinot from Tasmania. Just across the sea, the Bass Strait from Melbourne. They grow pretty outstanding Pinot in Tasmania. So,
ladies and gentlemen,
that's it.
I only have two follow-up questions. One, how old were you when you first took a shine to wine? Were you first involved
in this? Probably like 08, 09. I had a couple of, so I was 27, 28. Yeah.
Okay. And you loved the taste? Was that what set it off? You're like, oh, wow, I love the taste. I want to learn more about this.
It wasn't even about the taste as much as just like a couple of aha wines, like, oh, now I understand why people care about this. And then you kind of start to expand your horizon of like, well, wait, what else is there? Like, and then you're like, whoa, like, oh my gosh, this is like an entire science, you know, and it's very accessible to the amateur, right? Like the home enthusiast, right. You can get into it real easily. So
shout out to BevMo and Food and Wine. Those are
Total Wine and More. Yeah.
Last thing. If I said to you, all right, Drew, for the rest of your life.
Gil, I'm sorry. I forgot the most important obvious reason.
I'm sorry.
It goes hand in hand with travel.
Oh, there it is.
Like, you can, like, that. I will almost exclusively look and plan travel, like long extended travel in regions where I'm interested to try the wine, visit the vineyards, see what they're up making locally, because it's almost always better there than you're going to get at home.
Some people follow the Grateful Dead around you. You travel based on wine. I said to you now, for the rest of your life, we're taking everything away from you but one thing. You can't have any two of these. You have to have one. Tennis handicapping, your day job during the week, Olympics expertise.
You can have my job if you want.
Yeah, job is not part of it. Okay, sorry. You know what I'm getting at? Or wine. Like, what is the thing you enjoy more than any of the above? The most of all of the above, I should say.
I would put travel first, wine second, handicapping third.
Okay.
And yeah.
I don't know if you heard us suggest this, but you and Chris Fowler from ESPN share both a love of not only tennis, but wine also. So we believe that the greatest podcast ever would be the Chris Fowler Tennis and Wine podcast coming to a feed near you. So we're going to try to make that happen.
He's more well compensated than I am. So there's a good chance he's tried better wines than I have.
Let me call wine calls.
There you go. Yes. I love it.
Wine calls. Drew Densick @whale_capper on Twitter, which I don't think I mentioned earlier. The podcast, again, The Deep Dive with Andy Molitor, who we love. You guys do a great job on The Deep Dive sports. And you have a dedicated wine pod on Fridays, right?
Is that right? Just a segment. Wine of the week.
A segment. Okay.
I'm excited for tomorrow's wine of the week, though. So, yeah.
Wine of the week. Wow. And then there's NBC Sports, Bet the Edge. So we hope Drew gets to do more and more with them. Zach at Betting on X. Again, hope he would do more Tennis Channel stuff, but you're telling me they've sort of rethought
things.
They'll be back. That's right.
More with VSiN, though. We're going to have some daily videos throughout the tournament, so it'll be different.
What's our page on the website? Do we have a dedicated Australian Open page now?
I don't know if I should give it out yet because I haven't written my preview yet, so there might not be anything on it. I will tweet it when it's ready.
He'll tweet it at Betting on X when it's ready. Yeah. All right. Gentlemen, always a pleasure. We'll reconvene before Indian Wells, where they always botch the draw. But we'll try to do it. Love doing this with both of you. Wouldn't dream of doing it without you guys. So thank you to you both. And thank you to everyone for listening. Good luck. The Australian Open begins stateside Saturday evening. Good luck with all your bets. Thanks for listening.